Welcome. Today I would like to talk about something that I think is, at least to my mind, it's the most important thing. But I guess there are other good things too to talk about. But one of the most important things that has ever happened in the history of the human chronology, or the establishment of human chronology on Earth. That's what I would like to think that this is. I believe it is, because it was so unplanned, and it just was developed through the research I was doing at the time, and that will come up when we talk about Judges chapter 10. But for the Born and Raised article today, we have paragraph chapter 9. Chapter 9, paragraph 3. And we talked about this important scripture at Jeremiah 29 and 10, which I couldn't remember yesterday. I had trouble remembering where that was. And Jeremiah 29 and 10 helps us see that the 70 years would end at Babylon. Okay, but we know that there are ways, many ways of establishing the secular chronology of the Neo-Babylonian period from 605 to 587, or from down to 539, when Cyrus conquered Babylon, even, that period of time, one of which was the reference to Adad Guppy, who was the mother of Nabonidus, the last king of Babylon, who reigned for, I believe, 17 years up until 539 in Babylon. And her chronology of the chronology of her life establishes the same exact chronology for the Neo-Babylonian kings. So there are many ways that agree with each other through which the secular chronology of Babylon is established. Now, one of which is, of course, the business records of Babylon, which we talked about, I believe, also. But we're going to talk about them some more, too. And there are the Babylonian royal records, right, where we saw that in year 7, Nebuchadnezzar captured the king at Jerusalem, and his name was Jehoiachin with an N. Okay, so let's read this chapter now. Thus are the Bible's records, little ones, perfectly complemented by the Babylonian royal records during this period. While the destruction of Jerusalem came in BCE 587, which is Nebuchadnezzar's year 18. Just to check the math, 604 minus 17 equals 587, with Nebuchadnezzar's official year 1 being 604 BCE. So year 18 is 587, marking the beginning of what Josephus accounted as a period of 50 years from 587, 50 years in which the temple at Jerusalem stood desolate. Josephus said that. Okay, there's a reference. It's against Appian, Book 1, Section 21. At 2 Chronicles 36 and 21, we read that Jeremiah's statement about the 70 years was fulfilled, with verse 22 adding that King Cyrus helped to facilitate that fulfillment. I can't believe we're even making this video. It's quite remarkable that I'm talking about these things that were so exciting and still are exciting to me about the chronology of the world. So Cyrus helped to facilitate that fulfillment when, in his first year as Babylon's king, he commissioned that the temple of Jerusalem be rebuilt upon its site. However, it would not be completed until the year 6 of Darius, which is about BCE 517, year 1 of Darius being 522 BCE. 70 years, that is, 517, is a year which is 70 years after 587, which is the desolation in 587 when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple of Solomon, as it was at that time. It had still been the first temple upon the site of the temple in Jerusalem that was destroyed in 587 at Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. 70 years later, it will be completed in year 6 of Darius, which is about BCE 517. So there's the 70 years again of the prophecy. Josephus acknowledges that Jerusalem was desolate from the time of its destruction, quote, during the interval of 70 years, end quote, before mentioning the quote-unquote obscurity of 50 years. So he said also that the temple had lain in obscurity for 50 years. So that was, of course, the period from 587 until Cyrus conquered Babylon, which was, and then when he ordered the Jews to return and rebuild the temple, which took another couple of years, that was the 50 years of obscurity. When they began to build, that is, they began to build in about BCE 537, 2 years after, roughly 2 years after Cyrus conquered Babylon in 539 BCE. So that 537 is precisely 50 years. When they started to rebuild, then the obscurity of the temple, of course, ended because they'd begun to rebuild, and that was a period of 50 years from 587 to 537, during which the temple had been lying in obscurity, as Josephus said. So the account of Josephus helps us to harmonize these pieces of evidence with the inspired biblical account. The Persian and Babylonian histories are detailed here, and so accurate as to confirm many scriptural details. So we have the Babylonian histories from all of the records at Babylon. They took many records, including astronomical records and business documents and so on. And we have other records of their histories too, as we saw from the mother of Nabonidus. And there are more we're going to talk about too that are also records of Babylon's history. The chronology of Babylon can be obtained from these records. The Persian history would be the history of Cyrus and Darius. That's their history also is detailed, and it's accurate enough to confirm many of these scriptural details, which is how we know, for example, that Cyrus conquered Babylon in 539 BCE, or BCE 539, is from various records of these events, right? I mean, that we have to find some way that we can establish it. But I think that even the date of BCE 539 is better established probably from the Babylonian records than by any other means. Because, but, you know, it's very detailed. The secular history is a very complex thing, and to think that if you've never tried to understand it, you'll see how many contradictions there are in the secular history, unless you follow the chronology that is known to be accurate and is, in our case, we follow Jehovah's chronology. So the one that has helped us to understand and continues to be accurate in all aspects that we can ascertain, we continue to look at it from that viewpoint. Right now, I can't even say how BCE 539 is actually determined, but I know it's determined. And it's believed by Jehovah's Witnesses generally as being the correct date for the conquest of Babylon by Cyrus. It's the year BCE 539. It's possibly calculated actually backwards from some later date, is what I think is obtained for that. It's somehow calculated backwards so that it can be seen to be more accurate that way instead of forward calculating. You can't forward calculate history dates. You have to back calculate backwards into the past to generate historical dates generally. But it's so complex that I can't even remember how the year BCE 539 is obtained. There's so many different things to know about history, but that we'll have to determine that. It's just it's a very firm date, BCE 539, for the conquest of Babylon by Cyrus. But it doesn't matter because we have a very firm date, 587, for the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. So we know it's 539. We've obtained the 539 that way, based on the rule, the years of the kings of Babylon, from 604 all the way down to 539 in the BCE years. So let's go. Did I get ready here? Have I got this ready? I don't think I've made a choice yet for anything in the Proverbs. I haven't made a choice for Proverbs yet. What are we going to choose? Proverbs or Ecclesiastes? Jehovah's telling me choose Proverbs. Let's choose Proverbs 17. And what's it going to be? I didn't choose this. Right. That looks like it works. 17 and 10. A rebuke works deeper in one having understanding than striking a stupid one 100 times. Little ones. A rebuke works deeper in one having understanding than striking a stupid one 100 times. Striking a stupid one doesn't do any good. If the person doesn't have any understanding, it doesn't matter what punishment you administer to that person. They will not develop understanding from the punishment. And a rebuke is all that's necessary for one who has understanding. They don't need to be beaten, is what that's saying. That's a proverb from Proverbs 17, verse 10. Now, let's look at our Judges chapter 10. I guess I haven't set that up either. I haven't set this up in advance. I've been reading I've read Judges chapter 10. Maybe I did set this up, actually, but not. I didn't set it up, I know, on the computer necessarily. So if I look at my history, I may not see. Yeah, I don't see it anywhere else here. Let's see. But it would have jumped to the top. Yeah, I don't see. I didn't prepare this on the computer yet. Now, remember Abimelech? We read a lot about Abimelech, and that was all just for his 3 years of playing the prince. So, in our chronology, the genealogy, it's 1199 minus 3, the end of Abimelech's rule, because Gideon was from 1239 after Midian was conquered by Gideon. 7 years after 1246 came 1239 in the BCE years. 1239 then, 40 years of peace ensued under Gideon. So from 1239 to 1199, that was the 40 years. And 1199 minus 3 years for Abimelech is 1196. So we're in the year 1196 now. Now after Abimelech, there arose up to save Israel Tola, the son of Pua, the son of Dodo, a man of Issachar. And he was dwelling in Shamir in the mountainous region of Ephraim. Now this is the remarkable thing, because look what it says. And he continued to judge Israel for 23 years, after which he died and was buried in Shamir. So he's on the west side of the Jordan, a judge ruling in Israel. 23 years. So 1196, we said, was the end of Abimelech. Minus 23 is 1173. BCE, which is remarkable because that is incredibly close to the, well, if we go another 20 years, of course, but we're going to see that there's a 40-year period that begins. See, we're in 1173, right? Right. And then after him, Jair. Right. The Gileadite rose up, and he continued to judge Israel, Jair, for 22 years. So he was in Gilead on the east side of the Jordan. So this is the remarkable thing. And he came to have... The 1173 is a remarkable thing because that's roughly very close to when Eli began to rule, almost exactly. And we know that because Eli ruled for 20 years prior to... there's a part in the Septuagint where Eli ruled for 20 years, but he also ruled for 40 years in the Masoretic text. So Eli's 1173 to 1132 or something like that. But the first 20 years of his rule brings us down to about 1153 or 1152, and that's the exact time, which is the 300 years of Jephthah. When Jephthah began to rule, which was after the 18 years of the Ammonites beginning to conquer for 18 years, the Israelites on the east side of the Jordan. Okay, but let's continue on. Okay, we've done the chronology already. I'm trying to put it into the translation of the book of Judges. So Jair had 30 sons who rode on 30 full-grown asses, and they had 30 cities. And they continued to call Havoth-Jair down to this day. They are in the land of Gilead. After that, Jair died and was buried in Kamon. Now, when I discovered the chronology for the history of the world, I did not prepare any of this, so I'm just fumbling around just like I did then, too. I didn't have an understanding of preparing it in advance. I didn't calculate back to determine anything. I was coming down from 1452 and Israel entering the Promised Land and working my way down. And the sons of Israel again proceeded to do what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah, and they began to serve the Baals and the Ashtoreth images and the gods of Syria and the gods of Sidon and the gods of Moab and the gods of the sons of Ammon and the gods of the Philistines. Now, in my mind right now, I don't have it figured out. I don't understand it. I'm fumbling around right now just as I was then. But I know it worked out before. It's going to work out again. So I'm very excited about it. And so they left Jehovah. Right? They began to serve these other gods, Baals, Ashtoreth, images, gods of Syria, Sidon, and Moab, and the sons of Ammon, and the Philistines, their gods. They served and they left Jehovah. At this, Jehovah's anger blazed against Israel. So he sold them, and this is the most important verse here. Jehovah sold them into the hand of the Philistines and into the hand of the sons of Ammon. Right. Hence they shattered and heavily oppressed the sons of Israel in that year, the sons of Israel in that year. For 18 years, all the sons of Israel that were on the side of the Jordan in the land of the Amorites, that was in Gilead, on the east side of the Jordan is where Gilead is. It's quite remarkable because we had not been dealing with the east side up until this point, but we had this judge Tola was on the west side, in the mountainous region of Ephraim, that's on the west side, for 23 years, which brings us from 1196 to 1173. I hope I'm getting this right. But that's when Eli began to rule, right? And he ruled down and for 40 years until 1132, which is when we believe that's the time when Samson judged, until roughly 1112 on the west side of the Jordan. And that's when Samuel began to judge, was in 1112, the year 1112, for 12 years Samuel judged. After Samson, Samuel for 12 years, from 1112 to 1100, when Saul became king. So that works perfectly, but the other thing is that in the Septuagint, Eli ruled for 20 years, not 40. So this fits perfectly with the 1152, 1173 minus 20. It's close to 1152. It's 1153. That's almost exactly the same number. And that 1152 is the time when the Philistines began to rule west of the Jordan, at the same time in verse 7 here as the Ammonites ruled on the east side. The Philistines began to rule also at the same time on the west side. And we know that because the Philistines are on the west side of the Jordan. And the Ammonites, we know, were on the east because that's where Jephthah ruled when he conquered them after 18 years on the east side. And we know the Philistines ruled for 40 years. So the Philistines ruled. And also we know that the judge Samuel conquered the Philistines after their 40 years, which is from 1152 to 1112 BCE, when Samuel began to judge Israel. He had conquered, along with, of course, the help with help from Samson in his 20 years of judgeship. That's when the Philistine rule ended, after 40 years, so in 1112. It's a perfect fit here with the chronology, and nobody else ever has understood this that I've ever found anywhere. Nobody. So this was just revealed through a lot of hard work and study and the Bible. From the Bible, really, is how it was revealed. It's remarkable. Then Jehovah said, okay. So we haven't read this yet. We're going to have to move on, too. The sons of Israel said, okay, right, the sons of Ammon would cross the Jordan to fight even against Judah and Benjamin and the house of Ephraim, and Israel was greatly distressed. In verse 9, and the sons of Israel began to call to Jehovah for aid, saying, we have sinned against you because we have left our God and we serve the Baals. Then Jehovah said to the sons of Israel, was it not from Egypt and from the Amorites and from the sons of Ammon and from the Philistines and from the Sidonians and Amalek and Midian, when they oppressed you and you went crying out to me, that I proceeded to save you out of their hand? As for you, you abandoned me and took up serving other gods. That is why I shall not save you again. Go and call for aid to the gods whom you have chosen. Let them be the ones to save you in the time of your distress. But the sons of Israel said to Jehovah, we have sinned. You yourself do to us according to anything that is good in your eyes. Only deliver us, please, this day. And they began to remove the foreign gods from their midst and to serve Jehovah, so that his soul became impatient because of the trouble of Israel. In time, the sons of Ammon were called together and pitched camp in Gilead. This is the 18 years of domination of the sons of Ammon, which we just read about, in Gilead. So that's the east side of the Jordan. So the sons of Israel gathered themselves together and pitched camp in Mizpah. And the people and the princes of Gilead began to say to one another, who is the man that will take the lead in fighting against the sons of Ammon? Let him become the head of all the inhabitants of Gilead. And that's the end of Judges 10. And we know that turned out to be Jephthah, the Gileadite. And that was in the year, well, after the 18 years is when his judgeship officially would begin, after the 18 years. 18 years after 1152, when both the Philistines and the sons of Ammon began to dominate in 1152. Although these years, the numbers of the year, the actual year number may not be exact, but it's very close to 1152 because that's the time. It's exactly a 300-year time period, which Jephthah mentioned as the 300 years, that during which Israel had been dwelling in the Promised Land, right? Or from the beginning when they began to dwell on the east side of the Jordan for those 300 years from 1452 after the death of Moses, until 1152, 300 years later, which is exactly what we've come down to in our chronology here, 1152, which is, you know, 20 years after, right? Well, Jair, he ruled for 22 years, right? But it says in that year, so 1173 minus 21 is 1152 exactly. So in the last year of Jair, in other words, because it said in verse 7 that, sorry, for in verse 8, in that year, for 18 years, the Ammonites, the Amorites actually, in the land of the Amorites, sorry. No, the Ammonites, yeah, the Ammonites. The sons of Ammon dominated in the land of the Amorites on the east side of the Jordan for 18 years, but it began in that year. It says that year, which implies that it was 1 year before the end of the reign that they began, the end of the reign of Jair, which would be 1173, which was the end of Tola, minus 21 years for Jair, who reigned for 22 years total. So 1173 minus 21 is 1152, so we're exactly in the right year. So that was the miracle of the chronology that I was blessed by Jehovah to discover, and I'm still thrilled and excited by it even now, because it never changes in the sense that it never ceases to amaze me. 1 John chapter 4. Beloved ones, do not believe every inspired expression, but test the inspired expressions to see whether they originate with God, because many false prophets have gone forth into the world. You gain the knowledge of the inspired expression from God by this. Every inspired expression? That confesses Jesus Christ as having come in the flesh originates with God. But every inspired expression that does not confess Jesus does not originate with God. Furthermore, this is the Antichrist's inspired expression, which you have heard was coming, and now it is already in the world. You originate with God, little children, and you have conquered those persons, because he that is in union with you is greater than he that is in union with the world. They originate with the world. That is why they speak what proceeds from the world, and the world listens to them. We originate with God. He that gains the knowledge of God listens to us. He that does not originate with God does not listen to us. This is how we take note of the inspired expression of truth and the inspired expression of error. Beloved ones, let us continue loving one another, because love is from God, and everyone who loves has been born from God and gains the knowledge of God. But he that does not love has not come to know God, because God is love. By this the love of God was made manifest in our case, because God sent forth his only begotten Son into the world, that we might gain life through him. The love is in this respect, not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent forth his Son as a propitiatory sacrifice for our sins. Beloved ones, if this is how God loved us, then we are ourselves under obligation to love one another. At no time has anyone beheld God. If we continue loving one another, God remains in us, and his love is made perfect in us. By this we gain the knowledge that we are remaining in union with him, and he in union with us, because he has imparted his Spirit to us. In addition, we ourselves have beheld and are bearing witness that the Father has sent forth his Son as Savior of the world. Whoever makes the confession that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, God remains in union with such one, and he in union with God. And we ourselves have come to know and have believed the love that God has in our case. God is love, and he that remains in love remains in union with God, and God remains in union with him. This is how love has been made perfect with us, that we may have freeness of speech in the day of judgment, because just as that one is, so are we ourselves in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love throws fear outside, because fear exercises a restraint. Indeed, he that is under fear has not been made perfect in love. As for us, we love because he first loved us. If anyone makes the statement, I love God, and yet is hating his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot be loving God, whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should be loving his brother also. That's the end of 1 John chapter 4. We've got one more chapter in the book of the letter of and the book of 1 John. And that's all for our Bible study for today. We're now down to a few minutes we have for the video. Yesterday we had a longer video. We went overtime. It was a very long chapter in the book of Judges about Abimelech and how there was a millstone hurled upon his head by a woman, and he had his one of his men run him through with the sword to kill him so that he wouldn't die from the millstone hitting him in the head, so that he could avoid having people say about him in the future that a woman had killed him. He didn't want it to be said that he'd been killed by a woman. But Abimelech was not a good person at all, as we saw. He murdered his brothers, or his half-brothers, who were the sons of his father, Gideon, who was also called Jerubbaal. Abimelech was a very vicious, violent man, and he only ended up being involved with his rule of Israel for about 3 years. It turned out he only got 3 years of rule in the chronology attributed to his rule, or his time of playing the prince, as it said in Judges. But he was a very, very unworthy ruler based on how violent and murderous he was. Certainly it was not a, he was not a good man at all, very evil person, evil man. So what are we up to? We're very near the end. Yeah. So, I mean, it's been, the chronology is remarkable because the 1152 date is so perfect for everything in terms of the rule of Eli being 20 years in the Septuagint, which is just about perfect for the time from 1172, exactly 20 years to 1152. When we take 21 years after 1173, we get when we take 23 years from 1196, we get 1173. We take another 21 years for Jair, which we did after Tola, and we get 1152, which is when this domination began by the Philistines and the Ammonites on both sides of the Jordan, but the Philistines were on the west side. Anyway, 1152 is a very pivotal date, and it was pivotal for Eli too, because his 22 years, or his 20 years that he was said to rule in the Septuagint, fits very well with that, from 1152 to 1130, or 1172 to, or I guess 1173 to 1152 is very close to 20 years. I'm Ward Green. It's October 16th, 2023. The time, 21:26 hours, if I'm reading that correctly. And in my behalf, this is Crow. And this is Cassie saying bye for now. I love you very much.